But wait, no, one pasuk. So the we're holding Mishle Yud Gimel Yud. The pasuk says Rak Bezadon. Rak means alone, only Bezadon. Now Zadon means something that's done purposefully. So only when something is done purposefully, Yiten would it give forth to Matzah, a fight, Ve'et No'atzim, and with those that are that take counsel, like Eitzah. Eitzah is counsel. No'atzim are those that take counsel. So Ve'et over here means with. And with those that take counsel, Chochmah, there is wisdom. What is the pasuk saying? So there are different understandings here. One understanding says that a fight only evolves when there's will for a fight. You have, in English we say there, it takes two to tangle. It takes two to fight. You can't have a fight on your own. So, Rak Bezadon, only if it's purposeful would it give forth to a fight. Yiten Matzah. Ve'et No'atzim, and those that take counsel, so they don't respond right away. They won't run into a fight. Chochmah. Now, fights very often happen because people respond right away. So that's one understanding of the pasuk, and that's important to remember. Very often we shift blame. Why are you two fighting? So my favorite line is a parent asks a child, why are you two fighting? And he says, it all started when he hit me back. So if we think about it, very often that's what's happening. We're shifting blame. Like, you ask a person, why are you upset? So a person's going to say, I'm upset because this happened and that happened and the third thing happened. But the truth is, a person is upset because a person hasn't worked on his traits enough. The other things that happened, they might be upsetting. But the fact that he got upset is because he didn't work on his traits enough. That doesn't mean that the other side is right. The other side might be unjust and unfair. But the fact that we got upset is not because of what happened. What happened allowed us, in our unworthy state, to get upset. And over here also, Rak Bezadon, only if a person is purposeful and allows it to happen, only then Yiten Matzah does it lead forth to a fight. That No'atzim, and with those that take counsel, Chochmah. And there's another understanding over here. Rak Bezadon, only a person whose actions are done purposefully. A person who is a Rasha, and when he sins, it's on purpose. Zadon is very often used to describe how a person sins. So only when you have a person who sins purposefully, Yiten Matzah is there a fight. Because one of the things that a Rasha does is he causes everything around him to be in turmoil. A Rasha isn't happy with the turmoil that he has within. He has to get everything around him, everyone around him, into trouble. And this is one of the things that people have to be careful of, not only to be at peace with other people, but not to cause fights. And there's a saying that says that the only thing second to wickedness is stupidness. Stupidity. People sometimes say, I didn't mean it, I didn't realize. That's not an excuse. A person has to think. People shouldn't hurt other people's feelings and say, I didn't think about it. So think about it. You meet a new person, you don't ask him, how many children do you have? Maybe he doesn't have children. You meet a guy 45, you don't ask him, how long are you married? Maybe he's not yet married. You can't say, well, I didn't think about it. So think about it. A person is supposed to think before he speaks, and a person is supposed to think and be careful. And it's not enough to say, I wasn't thinking. And a person who is a rasha, so he's going to cause fights all around him. And a person who's a little bit less than a rasha won't notice, and he'll also cause fights all around him. If you remember what we discussed on Sunday, how little words that you say could cause couples to view one another more admirably, and we said this is true even about a person like Avraham Avinu, so unfortunately the same thing is true the other way around. Sometimes a person can throw a line about someone's wife, and he doesn't realize that by throwing that line, he caused the husband to view her totally differently. And he stuck a thought into that guy's mind, and it's hard to take that thought out. And the fact that the guy is going to say, yeah, I didn't mean it, that's very nice you didn't mean it. You have to mean to be well. It's not enough not to mean to be bad. Hon. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Who's reading?
I was reading.
We said one a purse. Oh. One a piece.
Oh, okay. Okay, well then I guess...
I forgot your name. Do you want to read a pasuk? Remind me your name. Okay. But remind me your name anyway. Binyamin. Okay. You want to read a pasuk?
Me?
Yeah. Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Yud Aleph. Hoch.
Hoch, yeah. Hon.
Hon. Hon Mahabal. Im At. Vekabez. Aliad. Yirba.
So the pasuk says, Hon, great wealth. Mehevel. From nothing. Hevel is like the air you breathe. From nothing. Yim'at will lessen. And the one understanding of this is that in a second the person could lose his wealth. It could be very wealthy one day and in a matter of moments it could change. The kovetz al-yad, the one who gathers a little at a time, might take him a long time, but he's always gathering a little bit. Yalbeh, ultimately he'll have a lot. So there are a few understandings to this pasuk. One understanding says a person's wealth, hon, mehevel yimat, from the things that he does that are worthless, like hevel, from the fact that he doesn't maintain a high level, yimat, he'll lose his wealth. The kovetz al yad, and a person who gives to the hand, meaning not that he gathers a little at a time, but rather he gives to the poor, yalbe, he'll have a lot. And then the pasuk is stressing the fact that wealth doesn't remain with a person, and the best investment is investing in people who need help, people who need tzedakah. And by giving tzedakah, we think we're giving the other person. We have a tradition that when a person gives tzedakah, he will not become impoverished from it. Obviously, a person is limited. Halachically, he's not supposed to give more than maximum a fifth of his wealth, but a person shouldn't feel like he's losing. And even though the Torah says, Lot nasun, you're not allowed to test Hashem, Hashem says, on one thing I let you test me. Uvchanuni na vezot amar Hashem. The prophet says in God's name, test me in one thing. You give, keep the Shemitah like our Parsha says, give the poor what I said you give them, and watch and see if I won't make you have so much wealth, ad bli dai, beyond any amount that you'll say enough, beyond what's enough, way beyond what's enough. What?
Where is it?
Where is it? I think
very,
it might.
Very good.
I know where this is.
Where is it?
I think it's in the Torah itself.
No, it's in the Navi.
It's really Hashem this way.
That's what it says, but the halachot of tzedakah we're going to have a whole class on. So
we just read one of the recent parshas, I think, yeah? No, maybe not.
I don't remember where it is. I thought it was here. I think it's in Yeshaya, but it might be in Yirmiyah. That's what I remember, but I'm not sure.
It says, test me on the Shemitah.
So over there it says, I think it's by the Shemitah. That's why I thought it was the Haftar for this week. I think so. Uvchanuni navizot amahar Hashem tzvakot. Think so. I thought it was in the Torah, but I don't see it now.
Yeah, that's why I said it.
I don't see it.
Well?
Yeah, I think it's there. Okay, could be. I don't remember. I don't remember.
Somebody just sent me a text message to ask you if you want sugar in your tea.
No, thank you. Tell him to drink the tea himself. It's okay.
Tell him I'd like some tea.
Oh. Let's continue. No. Leave it.
Okay, I will take.
Say thank you very much. No. Yeah. There's another understanding that says the following. Hon mehevel, a wealth that comes from nothing, yimat, will ultimately become less. What's that referring to? A person inherits wealth. There was I saw a fascinating article that over 50% of the people who win the lottery, don't end up being millionaires. They lose it very, very fast, and their lives are ruined by it. Wealth that comes suddenly, I saved it. I wanted to bring it to you guys. I have to, God willing, I'll print it and we'll post it. There's a beautiful article about they did research. They followed up on people who won the lottery, and they saw that most of them, their lives were a wreck afterwards. Everyone came to them for a loan, and everyone thought they could help them, and they everywhere they went, everyone spoke about them with jealousy. And our sages say that the Gemara goes as following. The Gemara says, if a person inherited money and he wants to waste it, he wants to get rid of it, so what he should do is hire workers and not watch over them, invest it in fine glass that breaks easily. The Gemara gives a listing of ways to lose your money. So they explain, what's the Gemara saying? The Gemara is saying that if a person inherits money so it comes easily, so he's not going to value the money, and then he's going to invest it stupidly. He won't really be following what's happening with it. And then he'll really lose it. He'll hire workers and he won't stand and watch what they're doing.
I bought a plane ticket.
Okay. Toda rabba. Thank you very much.
It's true. My other siblings wasted all this.
So the pasuk is saying, "Hon mehevel," according to this understanding, wealth that comes from nothing in a flash, yimat, it'll become less.
Okay. He's not talking about a high tech millionaire, for example, who
worked for it. Right, so kovetz aliyad, that's the end of the pasuk. Someone who used his hands, he worked, he gathered his wealth, yarbeh, he'll make it more. And we see that. That's the way it works. Well, people who work for their wealth usually try to maintain it. We have a guy here who told me, a guy from the Machon told me, that he had a relative who was a multi-millionaire, and before he died, he gave it all away to charity organizations. Whoa. And he left a certain amount, like a respectable amount for each child. And the truth is that I think he did the smartest thing possible. He gave to charity organizations, so he invested in mankind. And he left a little bit, like each grandson got a certain amount. I don't know.
How do you see it? How do Halakha say it about this?
No, the Halakha says parent has to leave for the children, right? But there's a long discussion how that works. They want to say that maybe this is different when a parent wants to get neretz, so then maybe that's not the mitzvah tzedakah. Regarding the mitzvah tzedakah, he's supposed to leave behind for his children, but that's for the class on tzedakah. That's a long discussion. I don't think we'll even have time for it then. When a person wants to give more than a fifth, it's a long discussion.
Another question.
Yeah.
Is that okay to buy lottery?
Lottery tickets. So let's leave that for the open session. It's a good question. We'll get that. Just remind me later. So hon mehevet yimat v'kovetz al yad yarbe. Our sages applied this pasuk v'kovetz al yad yarbe to one's learning. Person shouldn't think, oh, I only learned one chapter in Mishnah today, I only learned two halachot today. Kovetz aliyad, one who takes it with his hands a little at a time, yarbeh, ultimately you'll have a lot. A person should know that it amounts, and eventually you'll get a lot. And the key is consistency. The key to getting a lot is consistently taking a little bit. Pasuk Yud Bet. Nachshon, you want to read? Tochelet is like yachil, to expect, anticipation. Tochelet, anticipation, memushacha, that's drawn out, like limshoch, to draw out, to pull. Tochelet memushacha, drawn out expectation, machala lev. Brings machala as a sickness. It inflicts sickness to one's heart. Ve'etz chayim, and in contradistinction, ta'ava va'a, what a person wants, ta'ava, what a person wants, va'a, when it comes, when he gets it, that is etz chayim, that's like a tree of life. So, if one promises someone that he's going to do something, and he doesn't do it, this guy we were speaking about in the beginning of the class, so the poor guy is running all over the hospitals with his wife. And he's running to hospitals in Tel Aviv. He's running to hospitals in Jerusalem. He's doing, unfortunately, he's busy doing a lot of medical research and getting all kinds of treatments. And he had people who offered him to come and watch the kids. So he assumed they would do it. And then he's standing there in the middle of the hospital, and his wife's in the middle of getting treatment. Suddenly he gets a phone call that one of them didn't show up. So sometimes when you rely on someone and they don't do it, that in itself can cause heart disease. Not literally, but the idea is that it harms a person. There were parents. This is a story that became famous and it's worth remembering. Here in Jerusalem, it was Friday night, 2 o'clock in the morning. The wife suddenly breaks her water and she sees that that's it. The contractions are strong. She's going to be giving birth within an hour. So they have to rush to the hospital. They have a child sleeping at home. So they have a two-year-old child. They go across the hall. Their neighbors had promised them that if they have to go in the middle of the night on Shabbos, they'll come over, no problem. They knock on the door across the hall. And the neighbor opens the door. He's half asleep. And they tell him, look, it's a time where we're driving to the hospital. We're going to be giving birth shortly. Can you watch our kid? He's sleeping now. Do you want us to bring him over? Are you going to come over? Or can you watch him? However is good for you. We didn't wake him yet until we return. We're going to only come back after Shabbos. So the neighbor says, yeah, no problem. They go in the car and they travel to the hospital. The woman gives birth. They're together Shabbos. They come back Matzei Shabbos and they find the kid alone in the house, emotionally disturbed. He's been alone all Shabbos, all day. He doesn't know where his parents disappeared to. The neighbor, he meant well. He closed the door, fell back asleep, forgot all about it. This child has been receiving for the last year and a half psychological treatment. They're trying to undo the damage of a whole day where he doesn't know what happened, why he's all alone. His parents disappeared on him. True story. So the guy, the kid was 2, by now he's about 3, 3 and a half. But a 2-year-old wakes up and his parents aren't there, he doesn't know what to do with himself. I'm not talking about the fact that he didn't eat or drink. So when you expect someone to do something, if a person promises he's going to do something and he doesn't do it, that causes a person, his heart, that hurts a person deeply. The Etz Chaim Ta'avah, and when a person gets what he expects, people live up to their word, and they do what they promise, that's like a tree of life. A person feels, oh, I could count on people. This is every day. People promise they're going to do things, promise they'll help one another out. You could count on me for this loan of money. You could expand your business. You could count on me to be there to pick up the kids. You could count on me for X, Y, and Z, and they don't do it. Better not say you're going to do it. But if a person does say, and he doesn't live up to what he promises, so then it's no good. That's called you gave the other person heart disease. Not literally, figuratively. And this applies to the night as well. That's why very often guys tell me, could you do this or can we meet there? So you see, I wasn't able to live up to it today. But I write it down. I try to write it down right away. That Orchas Tzadikim writes. It says, if you see, you're going to forget. If you see, you forget things. So write it right away. If you don't write it down, so it won't work. Or another thing I do is I set it up adjacent to something I have to be there. So you were adjacent to another chavruta who I also missed. But what can I do? Pasuk Yud Gimel. Kol Tov, Laila Tov.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.
Laila Tov, Laila Tov. You want to read a pasuk?
Well, he knows how to read Hebrew, I heard.
You know what? He speaks also Hebrew. Imagine that.
No, I just don't even want to take away.
He's been here Yud Gimel years. He's going to read Yud Gimel, Yud Gimel.
Baz, one who scorns, ledavar, to a certain thing, yechavel lo, will be damaged by that thing. If you don't take something seriously, you scorn it, so you're endangering yourself to get damaged by it. Virei mitzvah, and a person who is fearful for keeping the mitzvot, hu yeshulam, he will be paid back. What does Bazle Davar Yechavelo mean? So one understanding says that if a person scorns something, you know, it means he was damaged by it once. People make fun of things they're scared of. People try to put down things that they fear. Like Rabbi Wein once said, a nation that really believes never again doesn't have to say never again. We try to strengthen what we're uncertain of by putting down the ability of something else occurring. We try to say, no, no, no. Everything else, that doesn't count. This is the way it's going to be. When you scorn, when you try to make fun of something, it's usually because you've been damaged by it. Virei mitzvah, hu yeshudam. So there's one who is fearful of commands, he'll get paid back well. A guy who walks into the army and he's willing to take orders, ultimately he'll manage there. There's another understanding here. Basle davar is referring to the Torah. The person says, this mitzvah isn't so important. Baz is that one mock something. It's not so important to wash my hands before I eat bread. I didn't. It's not so important to wash my hands after I go to the bathroom. Not so important to keep different mitzvot. So then yechave lo. Ultimately, he'll be taken to task over that. Virei mitzvah, one who is God-fearing and he fears to keep every mitzvah, who yishudam will get paid back well. Now there's a medrash here that says, King David said in front of the Ribon Shalom, he said, why is it that you created fools? Why did you create people who are not normal, who are insane? He was walking by and he saw a man who was insane. He had saliva going down his beard and he was scratching on the walls. And the man was insane. And King David saw this person and he felt scorn for the person. And he said, God, why did you do that? But he didn't mock the person. He didn't scorn him. He didn't understand why God created that. And God told him, you wait, you'll see, you'll need that person who's insane. And then King David, a while later, was captured by one of the Plishti kings, Achish, the king of Gath. Right. And he was put in prison. And they didn't know what to do with him. Now this king Achish had a wife who was insane. And she drove him crazy because she was crazy. She was literally crazy.
So did she just go crazy after she married?
I guess she went crazy, yeah. Either that or it was a political marriage. He married her for politics. And he never knew what he was getting into. I don't know the history. They didn't invite me to the wedding. What can I do? And they didn't take my advice on Shiduchim. So, what can I do? At any rate, so King David was in prison there and he didn't know what to do. So he was sitting there and he couldn't figure out how he's going to get out of there. So suddenly he remembered that insane person. So he decided, you know what? They can't be certain I'm King David. So he started scratching the walls and having saliva come down his mouth and jumping like a monkey and behaving insane. So the king comes in and they tell him, that's David over there. That's the big enemy. We got him. And he looks at him and he says, what? This one, I need it. He said, the pasuk says, Chasal meshugaim anochi. I don't have enough meshuganas here. I had enough. I have my wife at home. I don't need any more meshuganas. Hazeya Vorbeti, I'm going to bring this one to my house. Get rid of him. I don't want this one here. And he got rid of him. And then King David, God paid him back. He recognized, there's also a need for these people. Pasuk Yudalid. So we mentioned, we'll translate the pasuk first. Torat Chacham, the Torah of a Chacham, of a wise person. Mekor Chayim is a source of life. Lasur mimokeshe mavet, to help one stay clear. Lasur means to steer clear. Of mokesh is a stumbling block. In modern Hebrew, they call mines a mokesh. Mimokeshe mavet, from mines of death. Now the word Torah, we're accustomed to the word Torah meaning the five books of Moses, Chamisha Chamshei Torah, but it doesn't always mean that. Torah, within the Torah calls different sections a Torah. Zot haTorah Adam Kiyamut Boel. This is the Torah, it says in the Torah, in Parshas Chukas. If a man dies in a tent, so then the following laws should be followed. What do you mean this is the Torah? I have a whole Sefer Torah. Many times in the Torah, the Torah itself describes certain segments as being a Torah. So what does the word Torah mean?
This Torah, it says
instruction.
Huh? Instruction, right? Like the word hora'ah, like teaching. Torat chacham. So, one understanding is that the Torah that a wise person has is the source of his life, because that guides him to steer clear of death. Like the Gemara records that there was an Amora, I think it was Rav Yosef, that the king was coming to town. So everyone went out to greet him. Rav Yosef was blind. So, I think it was Rav Yosef. Pretty sure it was Rav Yosef. So he went to, and there was, standing next to him, there was a min. There was a man who was min, stands for, Rav Hershel Schechter said, Mitamide Yeshu Anotri, from the disciples of Yeshu, Jesus, who was the Anotri. So, this guy comes with him, he's a Jew who turned to the other side, and he tells him, I understand why everyone else went to greet the king. But you, well, what are you going to gain out of it? You're blind. What's the point? So Rav Yosef told him, watch, I'll show you that I know better than you what's going on. So he said, okay, let's see. Start being noise and trumpets. And this guy starts getting excited. He says, here, this is the king, here's the king. Rav Yosef tells him, pipe down, he's not here yet. So he looks, he says, hey, you're right. Start having the drum roll. He gets all excited, he says, here's the king. And Rav Yosef tells him, pipe down, he's not here yet. They start having the orchestra playing, and the guy gets all excited, the king's here! And Rav Yosef tells him, calm down, he's not here yet. Suddenly it's silent. The parade, the trumpets are ahead, the drums are ahead, the music's all gone ahead, and suddenly it's quiet. So Rav Yosef tells him, now the king's here, now look. So he looks and he sees, and he says, hey, how'd you know that? So he says, because we have psukim that describe how God appears. And those psukim also describe that there's noise, and then there's another kind of noise, and another kind of noise. Until finally, there's quiet, and when right after the quiet, that's when God appears. So he said, I know that we have a tradition that God has his kingdom in heaven appear like the kingdoms on earth appear. So I knew that all the noise, the king wasn't here yet, and when it gets quiet, that's when he's here. So our sages included in the Gemara and in the Mishnayot wisdom of ways of life. And the Pasuk is saying, Torat Chacham, the Torah that a Chacham has, that's his source of life. That's what's going to steer him clear from death. There's another understanding. And that understanding understands that the word Torah over here doesn't refer to the Torah, but rather it means a way of life. Torat Chacham, the way you see a Chacham behaving, his mannerisms, the way he deals with people. Mekor Chaim, you should know that that's a source of life. You could learn from him. Look at how he behaves. Look at how he treats people. That will ultimately teach a person to steer clear of stumbling blocks that lead to death. And I can tell you, I have a friend who invested. Someone came up to him and told him, look, you have a lot of money. I'll give you an investment. I'll give you X return. A huge return. 15-20% return on your money. I have this great business. You'll make a lot of money. So the guy says, okay. So he invests with him $500,000. Invests $500,000, and every month he gets his paycheck. At the end of the year, he says, hey, I got 15-20% on my money. Whatever the deal was, I don't know the numbers, but I got the guy's living up to his end of the deal. Another year passes. He's still getting those 15%. A few years pass. And then the guy tells him, look, I paid you back, right? I'm going to give you another option to reinvest. So he gives him a contract, and the contract, he reads it, he says, I'm not sure it's permissible halachically, the laws we learned yesterday, the laws of ribbis. He says, I'm not sure, I want to take it to my rabbi, I want to ask him if this contract is permissible, because I'm not sure I'm allowed to take the interest the way the contract is worded. You're a Jew, I'm a Jew, I'm not allowed to accept interest from a Jew. So he takes the contract to his rabbi. And his rabbi looks at the contract and he says, wait a second, before we discuss the halacha, how's this guy giving you 15% interest on your money? So he says, I don't know, but I'm telling you that he's done it for 5 years now. And if he's willing to give it to me again, so this time I'm willing to invest $1,000,000 with him.
It's a partnership.
So the rabbi said, do me a favor. Do the math. Let's say you gave him $500,000. Do the math between the time you gave him the money and now. Would that $500,000 sustain him just to pay you the 15%? Meaning he never gave you back that $500,000 yet. Isn't it like it's just up now? Let's do the math, because I think it's up right now, and that's why he's asking for another investment. On this one, you're not going to see a penny, which is exactly what the guy did. He duped a lot of people, because he, for the first 5 years, he gave them the percentage. They saw that he was constantly paying that 15%, so it looked believable. So they were all willing to give him a lot more money. If he gave him a lot more money, he fled the country. But this guy, he went to his rabbi and asked him, hey, is this permitted? So the rabbi looked it over and he said, I think you're being duped. Doesn't make sense. So how did he know? Because when you learn, so certain things you're supposed to learn to understand. You don't understand everything, but the ways of a wise man are supposed to lead us to ways of life. They're supposed to be a source of life. Pasuk Tes Vav. Shalom, you want to read? Yeah. Sechel Tov. Sechel is wisdom, is brains. Sechel Tov, good brains, Yiten Chen, gives a person, how do we translate Chen?
Grace.
Favor, grace. They're not accurate, no. How do you translate Chen? What? No. Chen is when you see a person and everyone likes him. You know, there are people who are... Yeah, it's something like charisma. It's not clout, no. It's more like charisma. So, a good brain, or someone who's smart, that imparts chen to the person. The derech bogdim, in the way of people who are... They're rebellious, is eitan, it's tough. Eitan means tough, strong. Sometimes you think a person's very good looking. I remember when I was very, very young, so there was an actor who I always thought was very, very intelligent. And then I was once visiting a friend and there was a shoot. They were taking taping his show, whatever it was, and everyone was standing around looking. And when they finished, so I was young, I knew the hip thing is, you go to the actor and you ask him for an autograph. So I walked over there, and I don't remember what happened, we started talking. And I saw the guy was a complete dolt. So I walked away. So he said, didn't you want something? So I said, no, it's okay. Now you're talking about someone who until then I thought, wow. But you speak to a person, so after you see that there's no brain, so then you're not so impressed with the person. And it goes the other way too. When you meet someone, initially, your first impression is what you see. But afterwards, when you speak to a person and you discover how intelligent and how filled a person is, so sometimes that in and of itself gives chen. And that's why sometimes when I read a shidduch, so guys ask me about looks, and sometimes I don't like answering that. It's a fair question. But guys have to recognize that someone could look a lot more appealing depending on how much brains they have. And they could look a lot less appealing also depending on how much brains they have. A lot of a person's looks depends on if you find them to be an intelligent person. Now that's not a question of IQ. Sometimes we could sit at the same table and we'll all be talking and one person's going to walk away and say, gee, that guy was brilliant. And everyone else is going to walk away and say, what a fool. Now I was once at a Yahrzeit Drasha. They brought a professor to speak. So the guy was talking. And after he finished speaking, everyone gathered around him to ask him all kinds of questions. And I thought, wow, everyone's so impressed with him. Okay. I walk outside, so they go to the meal, and the professor doesn't come. And you should have heard the way people were talking. What a fool. What a this. What a that. And I'm wondering, gee. Okay. The brains of a person is what can give chen. Chen is something which a person can have innate, but usually it's connected to his being smart. V'derech bogedim, and the way of people who don't keep their word, they're boged, they're traitors. So that's tough. That's tough for everyone. It's tough for them and it's tough for their surroundings. Once a person is a traitor, so the chips start falling all around them. Like we described once in the past, it's like you have a puddle, you drop a pebble in the middle, and you see all around it, you see the circles, the waves in the water. When a person does something like that, when a person is a trader, so then it affects everyone around him. It could be a guy I know who had a business, and someone in his business tried to ruin the business. So he made an extra buck. He gave information to the competition. But by making that extra buck, he killed the business. And by killing the business, he caused 30 people to lose their jobs. And a lot of people now don't have jobs. So sometimes we have to recognize that being a traitor is something that's tough on everyone. It's not just the person who's doing it. It's tough on him also, and then. Pasuk Tzayin? Chavon.
Kol ha'um yaseh b'da'at u'chsil yifchos yivelet.
Kol arum. Arum is a person with cunning. Ya'aseh v'da'at, does his actions with knowledge. Uchsil, and the fool, yifros ivelet, he spreads out his foolishness. What's this referring to? This is like the comparison between King David and King Ahasuerus. King Ahasuerus wanted a wife, so he sent out word, I'm going to gather every young, beautiful girl into my castle, and I'll see who I want as my wife. I'll try each one out for a night, and afterwards they'll go into my special house of concubines. They'll never be released again. So everyone hid their daughters. They said, who knows? Maybe my daughter he'll like. Yeah, but he's trying out hundreds of other girls. Why should he like my daughter? And then my daughter loses her life if she isn't the one that's chosen as queen. King David said, I want to find the right girl, and the right girl is going to be my wife forever. So everyone wanted to give their girl, because they know if he won't marry her, she'll have a normal life. What do they lose? Kol arum, a person who has cunning, a person who's smart, yaseh v'dat, so he does his actions with knowledge, with wisdom. Uchsil, and the fool, yifros ivelet, he spreads out his foolishness, everyone sees it. And that's like we discussed the Midrash, that Ahasuerus publicized his foolishness, and that was one of the things that ultimately saved the Jewish people. Everyone saw what a fool he was by all the actions that he did. That's why when he decreed to wipe out the Jewish people, you'd think everyone would jump the gun. They know the king's on their side. What does he care? So we'll kill the Jews a half a year early, a year early. They didn't do that because they said this guy's crazy. One day he says this law, the next day he says that law. Who knows? He might change his mind by then, which he did. He turned to the Jews' side, and everyone saw how foolish he was. He spread out his foolishness. So no one dared touch the Jews till they knew for sure that was the decree. Yeah.
Elsewhere in Mishlei, the word arum seems to have a kind of a negative connotation. Like, at least in comparison to the Chacham.
I don't remember. Are you sure it's arum and not mirma? So there it seems to be positive. Latet liftaim oma. Is that what you're referring to? Because that's positive. It says to give the fools the cunningness to discern between what is a fool, what is a peti. The pasuk says latet liftayim oma, to give the peti oma. Peti, the psukim define is yamin lechol davar, is a person who has no cunning. Whatever you tell him, he believes him. So King Solomon is saying, I'm teaching you this book of Proverbs, and with this, ultimately, you'll be able to acquire the ptaim, the fools who easily believe everything, will have oma, they'll have cunning, and they'll be able to discern what's true and what's not true. So there it is positive. There's a chapter in Bechoros, if I'm not mistaken, called Ketzad Ma'arimim, and over there the Tiferes Yisrael, that's the explanation on the bottom of the Mishnah, Yachinu Boaz, discusses the term orma and ma'arimim. You find also that Yosef's Dina's brothers, when they had the problem with their sister being kidnapped, so they answered with cunning. It says over there. The question is cunning bad or is cunning good? So in Mishlei, I think it seems overall that cunning is good. The question is then, why do we pray every day? Elokai netzo leshonim meira, usfatai midaber mirma. So there, we have to apply what the Tiferes Yisrael says, that there's a difference between mirma and oma. Even though they sound similar, he wants to say there's a difference.
What's the different shorash between the mem and the ayin?
That's what he's developing, that it's different. I'm not sure everyone would agree with him on that. But, okay.
Also, hanachash haya arum, what did he call it?
Yeah, so there it's also positive. He was given that orma in order to be able to lead the animals. I think that's how the Gemara in Sota understands it. Even though from the context it would seem negative, that the Nachash was Arum. Yeah. Gentlemen, you have strength. You want to continue? You want to stop here? You want to go over to Tehillim?
Oh, wow.
What?
Continue?
Yeah?
Hey, go ahead. I,
okay,
don't,
so
don't
you're...
Bother me. Don't bother me. Don't...
It's your turn to read. You want to read or I'll skip you? You
don't bother with me.
Don't bother with
me. we won't finish the parak tonight, but...
Hey, if you want me to read, I'll read.
Sure, read. We're holding chapter 13, Pasuk Yud Zayin.
Don't bother with me.
Rish v'kalon paureya mutsa.
No, the pasuk before that.
Oh.
17.
Here we go. Malach rasha yipol bara v'tzir imunim marpe rish.
No rish, just marpe.
Oh, yeah, that's up here.
Malach literally means a messenger. That's why the malachim are called messengers. Are called malachim, because they're God's messengers. Malach rasha, a wicked malach, yipol v'ra, will fall with bad, we'll define in a minute. V'tzir, tzir is also a form of a messenger. Emunim, who is trustworthy, marpe is healing. Malach rasha, a messenger who is wicked. So, sometimes you send the messenger. A guy could tell his friend, I can't make it over to Uzbekistan to engage this girl. Here's a ring. It's my ring. You be my shalech. You be my messenger. Do me a favor. Engage her for me. Today we wouldn't do that, but in Chazal's time that could happen. The guy travels to Uzbekistan. He sees the girl. What an amazing girl. He dates her. He takes out his own ring and says, want to get engaged? Okay. Did he do something wrong? You have to decide who you're sending as a messenger. Malach Rasha, if you send a wicked messenger, Yipol Bera. So even though he might do you harm, ultimately he himself will fall in that wickedness, in that evil. There's a story in... Okay, we shouldn't say that. So our sages said this applies to Bilam, that Hashem told him, don't go, don't curse the Jewish people. And Bilam kept on trying to find the loophole to go. And finally God said, okay, you could go, but bless them. So Bilam was a rasha. And Bilam went, hoping that he'd be able to, so to speak, dissuade God from his love of the Jewish people, to convince God to curse the Jewish people. And every time he tried to find something the Jews were doing wrong, so God would agree that it's fitting to curse them. And every time God switched it over, God said, no, they're doing right, they're doing good, and God gave them a blessing. And finally, they saw that he couldn't curse the Jewish people. So even though he was a prophet, and his curse would have had an effect, but he saw God didn't agree. So he went to Balak and he said, I'll give you a word of advice. I'll tell you how you get rid of them. Get them to sin. Here's what you do. Their God, if there's one thing he dislikes, it's improper relationships with women. So set up tents out there. Have old women standing outside the tent selling some salty food. And then the young Jewish men will come out, they'll buy the salty food, and they'll ask if they're selling drinks. And the old women will say, yeah, we got drinks inside the tent. They'll go inside the tent. Over there you have these girls ready for them with the wines. And there you could seduce them to sin. And that's what they did. And the Jews ended up sinning with the girls of Moab. They're about to enter the land of Israel. They're holding at the end of the 40 years. And because of Bilam's piece of advice, the Jewish people fell. They sinned and thousands died. So Bilam was a messenger of God. Initially God told him, don't go. And then God said, go, but bless the Jewish people. What did Bilam do? He tried to overcome that task. He couldn't. So at least he caused them to sin, hoping that then they'd be cursed. What happened to Bilam ultimately? Bilam went back home, and then he heard that his advice worked. So he came back to collect. He said, hey, pay me. My advice caused thousands of Jews to die. When he was there, the Jews attacked. There was a war. So he took The Medrash says that he took with him other magicians like himself, and they flew on flying carpets. Bet you didn't know. The Medrash, there are flying carpets. It says Bilam knew how to fly on a carpet. And he went with his men, and they flew on carpets. And then the Jews were able to overtake him with God's secret name, and they killed him as well. So Malach Rasha, a messenger who's a Rasha, for example, Bilam, he did what God told him. God didn't tell him not to give advice. God told him, bless the Jewish people. So he blessed them. But he found a loophole to go against what was God's will, so to speak. So ultimately, he fell with that bad that he caused. Give me just a second. Vitzir emunim, but a messenger who's trustworthy, who's emunim? There's one person in Tanakh, not one, but Moshe Rabbeinu is the one that's identified as being a ne'eman, a trustworthy messenger. That Moshe Rabbeinu didn't change one iota from what God wanted him to do. What do we say on Shabbos? Yismach Moshe b'matnat chelko. Moshe is going to be happy with his portion. Ki eved ne'eman karata lo. For God called Moshe an eved ne'eman, a trustworthy servant. And that's one of the greatest praises that Moshe Rabbeinu got, that he was called trustworthy. Ne'eman. Emet is God's signature. Our sages say that once they found a note, and they looked at the note and they said, this came down from heaven. And the note was signed Emet, Aleph Mem Ta. So they said, God's signature is Emet. That's our tradition, that God's signature is Emet. Emet has the first letter of the Aleph Beis, the last letter, Aleph is the first, Taf is the last, and in the middle you have the Mem. So God's signature is Emet. And Moshe Rabbeinu is called akin to God. He's called an Eved. On one hand he's a servant. On the other hand, he is Ne'eman, he's trustworthy. So Tzir Ne'eman, a messenger who is trustworthy, he is Malpeh, he heals. He sees God says, go, the Jewish people have to be destroyed, let go of me. They've sinned. So Moshe Rabbeinu reads between the lines, says, what does God want? What's he telling me, let go of him? I'm not holding him. Yeah, I can't hold on to God. God's telling me I could hold him. He's saying, let go of me, so to speak, so I should hold on. I had a friend who, when guys would get him upset, he'd grab one of the guys and say, hold me back, hold me back, I don't want to hurt. I mean, he like grab the guy and hold him in front of him. So what's Hashem saying? Hold me back. Hashem's saying, so to speak, hold me back. So Tzir Emunim, messenger who's trustworthy, Moshe Rabbeinu, so he's Malpei, heals. He sees God saying, let go of me, I got to destroy them. Moshe thinks, I'm not holding on. God's hinting to me, I could hold on. So he doesn't let go. God saying, let go. I didn't touch him. And you'll find that when you get married too. No, wives sometimes say that. Don't leave. He wasn't thinking of leaving. So then he thinks, okay, I will go. Yeah. No, she's saying, don't leave. she doesn't want him to leave.
That means, yeah, there's a chance I could leave. Right.
There's a chance you could leave, but she doesn't want you to leave. She's scared, that's what you're thinking. So Moshe Rabbeinu reads between the lines, and he stays up there, and he starts praying. He says, God, no, forgive them. Come on. They're the great-grandchildren of the patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. Look at what their past is. Look what the future. What are the nations going to say? So here we see that sometimes you have to read between the lines. Russia isn't always defined only by what the letter of the law says. And a good person, the one who's trustworthy, is the one who knows what the other person wants. We have to know what the person wants. And that's something also, in marriage you'll find, that's one of the great frustrations that husbands have the first few years of marriage. Even if he tries to be a good husband, he has no clue what she wants. Tries one way, it doesn't work. Tries the other way, it doesn't work. He asks himself, what kind of creature did I marry? The answer is, you'll learn. It might take 40 years, but you'll learn. And that's true. Like parent told me today, said, my son's a tzaddik, but he's a complete fool. If I send him to the makolet and I tell him, bring me 2 bottles of this orange juice. So he comes to the makolet and there's only one. So he's capable of bringing one and saying, well, that was the only one they had of this brand. He's capable of bringing none and saying, well, you sent me for 2, they didn't have 2. But he won't think of buying one of this brand, and if they don't have 2 of this brand, they'll buy another brand. And I'm thinking, lady, I could hear you saying it just the other way too. I sent them for this brand too, so I wanted this brand. I didn't tell them to buy another brand. Like there are times when a woman really wants only that brand.
Right.
What am I going to do with the other brand? Okay, I didn't say anything. Fine. What can I say? What? No. I told you guys. I try not to say anything that has to do with anyone here. I'm not hinting anything to anyone. No, not at all.
And the Pepsi guy, remember? He sent it for Pepsi, brought back Pepsi Max. Diet.
What's wrong? How would you know? What difference? They're all Pepsi. Okay. Ryan, how do you want to read?
Yeah. What is it?
Yud Chet, 18. Just saying, yeah, what?
Could you explain? I thought you said that Midrash, Bilal was killed at the time of the Israelites striking back at Camp Ahimelech. So I thought Bilal was killed in the time of Yehoshua.
You're right in what you thought. It is recorded in the time of Yehoshua, but it is also recorded in Parashas Matos in the time of Moshe. So we understand from that it is re-recording in the time of Yehoshua what happened directly prior to Yehoshua's taking the leadership in the time of Moshe, because this was at the end of the 40 years. But you're right, it is re-recorded in Sefer Yehoshua. Sefer Yehoshua mentions it again.
Arish Kalon Baraf Musar Vashumar Vashumer Tokahet Yikavod.
Reish, it's like the word rash, poverty. Vikalon, and shame. Now, there are many terms for shame. There's busha, there's kalon, there's cherpa, and there's the Yerushalmi, which I once bumped into, that defines the difference between them. I don't remember what the Yerushalmi says, which one means what, but the Yerushalmi says that one of them means it's a shame, that a person is ashamed because other people will see him. There are certain things that we're embarrassed when other people see. The dream that almost every kid has, that he walks to school without pants. Now, a person is not embarrassed to be without pants when he's alone. He's embarrassed to be in school without pants. That's one kind of shame. And then there's shame that a person feels shame between himself and himself. It has nothing to do with other people seeing. There are two different types of shame. Now, there are more than two types of shame, because there are more than two terms for shame. And the rule is that in Hebrew, every term you have has to be different. They could be very, very similar, but there has to be a difference between them. No two words have the exact same meaning. If you define two words as exactly the same, then you don't fully understand either one of them. Or you don't understand both. You might understand one. So resh, poverty, vikalon, and shame come onto the person who is porea musar. Porea means to uncover, to undo, to tear open. It really means to undo. We say that pu'ei rosh means with their heads uncovered. You undo the covering of the head. But porea literally means to undo. Resh vekalon, poverty and shame come onto a person who is porea, he undoes musar, the things that steer a person from following his physical traits. And musar is what pushes, we discussed this in the past, that it is the term that refers to a person steering away from the physical to the spiritual. So one who undoes that will find himself with poverty and shame. One who undoes musar, v'shomer tochachat, and one who watches over rebuke, Yechubad, will ultimately get honor. So a person thinks, what am I going to listen? They'll tell me like this and they'll tell me like that. I don't want to listen. So he thinks that's when he's a proud free man. The Pasuk says, no, he's going to be followed with poverty and shame ultimately. And when a person gets rebuked, so the initial feeling is, I'm being put down. Why should I accept that? The Pasuk is telling us if a person listens and accepts rebuke, ultimately he'll get honor. I told you guys the story about the rabbi who I was boarding in his apartment, mm-hmm. and by mistake I burnt his frying pan.
Making the planta.
Right. So afterwards I wanted to pay him back for his frying pan that I burnt. So I bought a new frying pan. And then I was scared he wouldn't accept it from me. So I took his frying pan and I hid it. So now I didn't have another frying pan. So I told him, look, I owe you. I burnt your frying pan and I have to pay back for your frying pan. So take this frying pan and use it. I went to the mikveh, I got it tovel, I did everything I have to do. Use this. I ruined your frying pan. So he said, firstly, you didn't ruin my frying pan. There are halachos about chatzitza, when you tovel a vessel, and when a pan is burnt and you can't remove that burnt, you don't feel it, and you removed as much as you could. So that's not a chatzitza anymore. You could immerse that. You could tovel it. So you see that doesn't count. We don't treat that as an entity. So who cares? He quoted a halacha and he said, who cares? Then he said, give me back my frying pan. So I said, no, what do you mean? I want to pay you back. I owe you a frying pan. So he said, I don't want it. So I said, there's a halacha that says that you could give something to someone by giving it to someone else. Meaning, if I want to give you this watch, right? So let's say you're not here. So I say, Michael, you pick up this watch and have in mind to acquire it for Binyamin. So his actions of acquiring, we say, Zachin Adam Shelo Befanav. Something that's a merit, something that's that a person would want, you could do for him. We automatically assume that he gives you power of attorney to do something positive, something that he gains from. There's an automatic assumed power of attorney that every Jew has to help another Jew. Something that's positive. And that's why when you guys come to me for Shabbos, so you come for the Friday night meal, you have to light Shabbos candles. So I'm going to light Shabbos candles at home. My wife's going to light them. So I want you to have an ownership in those candles. So I knock on my neighbor's door and I say, look, do me a favor. Pick up these candles and have in mind that you're acquiring a portion of the candles for my guests that are coming on Shabbat. And he could do that. My wife, well, she's an extension of me. She can't do that. But my neighbor, he could do that. Just like I can't pick it up for you. It has to leave my possession. Someone else has to acquire it for you. So I told him, look, I did this already. You're stuck. I asked my roommate, the other guy here, I said, acquire this for the rabbi. And he acquired it already. So it's yours. There's nothing you can do. You can't give it back to me because I used a forced power of attorney. It's yours. So he said, nope. He said, that doesn't work because if I... The minute I find out, I notify that I'm not interested in that power of attorney, so then I nullify it retroactively. And I notified, the second you tell me now, I'm notifying that I don't want to give that power of attorney. So this frying pan is not mine, it is yours, and please give me back my frying pan. At which point, I felt frustrated. I thought I had outsmarted him, and here he proved that he had outsmarted me. So I said, it's not fair. Why do you think you could always give me and I can't give you? Do you think it's fair? Why are you always on that side? Why aren't you willing to accept something? And then I was surprised. He stood looking at me seriously. I was saying it jokingly. But he looked at me seriously and he said, you know, that's a very good point. I really didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to be condescending. I didn't mean to do anything that would bother you. I'm very sorry, you're right. I really shouldn't have done it in a way that you feel like I'm so proud, I'm not willing to accept anything from you. And I was surprised, like here he is apologizing to me, and I was joking, like part of the back and forth and back and forth. I was joking. And that's this pasuk. Shomel tochachat, a person who watches, he tries to watch over when he gets rebuked, yechubad, he gets honor. He didn't lose any honor by accepting it. I didn't even mean it as rebuke. Who am I to rebuke him? I wouldn't have ever thought to rebuke him. But he was looking. If someone says something, so maybe he could gain something from it. So the second he heard something that sounded like a little bit, maybe he did something wrong, he listened up and he said, hey, wait a second, the guy's got a point. So what do I care that he's younger than me? He's old enough to be my son. What do I care that he knows not even a tenth of what I know? So what? He said something that has a good point. I got to listen to it. I got to learn from that. So he automatically apologized and said, hey, I have to learn from that. Thank you. It's a good point. That's what the pasuk says. Shomer tochachat, one who watches over rebuke, yechubad, ultimately he'll get honor. Our tendency is usually when someone tries to rebuke us, the first reaction is, no, I'm okay, I didn't do anything wrong. We're automatically defensive and we try to undo it. But a smart person who will ultimately get honor out of it is someone who listens and says, gee, maybe you're right. Yeah.
Can I set the date for the right date?
Yeah.
Thanks. That's annoying.
Thank you. Laila Tov. Just a second. Laila Tov. Yutet, who's turn been? Not yet. Soon, you'll get there.
Ta'avan nihiyet te'arev l'nefesh l'cholavot k'silin sormera.
Ta'ava nihiya. What is ta'ava? Ta'ava is what a person wants, right? We had it. You remember? Let's look back just a second. Pasuk Yud Beis. We said, Etz Chaim ta'ava va'a. Said, when one gets what he wants, that's like a tree of life for him. You want something, you expect, you rely on someone that he's going to do something, that's like Etz Chaim, a tree of life. So over here also, same term, ta'ava, what a person wants. Ta'ava nihiya. Now the word nihiya, we're accustomed to meaning like haya or nihiya. But in Tanakh, the word haya also has a root of hove. And the word hava and hovaya means a breaking. So over here, nihiya is from the root of nahiti, to mean to break. So ta'ava, what a person wants. Nihiya, which could mean either breaks, or we'll see if there's another meaning. Te'erav lenafesh. It's sweet to a person's soul. Like we say every morning, V'arevna, we ask God to make the Torah sweet in our lips. V'arevna tevei Torah befinu v'yamcha b'tisrael. So, one understanding over here is that when a person has his physical drives, he wants all kinds of things and he manages to overcome them, he breaks them and they don't rule over him, but he rules over them. Te'erav lenafesh, that's sweet to his soul. King David, when he became an old man, the doctor said there was no way for him to maintain his physical warmth other than if he takes a young girl to lie next to him. And that was the only way he could remain hot, otherwise he was freezing. This is what the doctors of the time said. Now he had 18 wives, and he didn't want to pain any one of them, so he wasn't willing to divorce any of them. So he couldn't marry this 19th girl. So he took a girl, and she was lying next to him all day, and he never married her, and he never had marital relations with her. And our sages say that over here King David wanted to break his desire for marital relations. He had fallen with that desire. He had taken a woman who he shouldn't have taken. And he wanted to overcome that. And when he overcame that, that's what the pasuk is saying. Ta'avaniya, when one breaks, when one manages to overcome his physical desires, te'rav lenafesh, that's sweet to his soul. And the what you asked is the reason that he didn't have marital relations with her, not because he is old. So the Gemara asked that. The Gemara says that at one point she turned to him and she said, it's not that you're such a tzaddik, you don't have strength. So the Gemara says that a short time later one of his wives came in and he went with that wife and had marital relations I don't know how many times in a row. And he said, no, I have strength. I'm not doing it because I want to be a pious person. It's not that... Ta'avaniya te'rav lenafesh v'to'avat kesilim sur mera. And to'avat kesilim, what the disgusting things, notice ta'ava with an aleph is not to'ava with an ayin, right? To'ava is the disgusting things of the fools. What they find disgusting is sur mera, turning away from that. Meaning a fool is always interested in getting more of the physical. Wants to eat more, he wants to have more wives. He's bound by his physical. A person who isn't a fool, so he's going to try to overcome his physical desires. He's going to try to control them and do what's right. Ta'ava nihiya, another understanding, is that the word nihiya stems from haya. Not from havot, breaking, but rather from haya, there was. Ta'ava niya, when what a person wants comes true, te'rav lenafesh, that's sweet for his nefesh. And because of that, to'avat kesilim su mera. That's why the fools find it disgusting to steer clear of bad, because a person always is attracted to what's not good for him. And you should know that's also true in dating. Just like a moth is attracted to fire, sometimes people are attracted to what's not good for them. I once dated a girl who I felt was attracted to an abusive husband. So I was contemplating calling her parents and telling them, look, I think you have to watch out over here. Maybe she needs counseling, maybe something else before she continues dating. And I might not have a right to say it as a guy who dated her, but the way the conversations here are flowing, I definitely see, and I would quote to them things that she said. So there is an aspect where a person can sometimes be attracted to what's not good for him. And the fool is constantly attracted to what's not good for him. He wants only the physical. Look around you. The world is going this path. Everywhere you look, that's the advertisement. Makes you wonder what people are investing their time in. Okay, I always ask myself, people don't realize that the girl they're going to marry is going to get old. She doesn't maintain those looks forever. Okay, everyone's advertising the looks. No one's talking about anything beyond that. And people walk away thinking that that's what life is all about. Well, it's not. It's impossible for it to be that way. So what happens? People continue life thinking that that's what it's all about. And then if their wife is not like that, so then they still have to get that, because that's what life is all about. That's what society is constantly, that's the message it's sending. So the pasuk is saying that a person should recognize it is sweet. Yeah, a person wants something that's going to be sweet for him. And that's why he finds it disgusting to turn away from what's bad for him. Because what's bad for us sometimes tastes sweet. Pasuk Chaf. Who's reading? Michael.
Cholech.
Cholech, cholech.
Cholech. Cholech. Cholech et chachamim vechkam.
Mm-hmm. One who walks with wise men, he'll become wise himself. It rubs off. And one who takes as friends, like re'im. Ro'e over here doesn't mean like a shepherd, but rather re'im, like a friend. One who attaches himself for friends. Fools, yero'a. Over here, the word yeroa is from the root of bad, or more like will be bashed and broken. Whoever goes and makes friends of fools will ultimately be broken. And that's why our sages again and again warned us what company a person is found in. It's going to affect him. A person can't think, I'm going to go off to college somewhere where there are no Jews, and I'll manage, and I'll be all alone there, but fine, I come from a good home, I know what I want, I know where I'm headed. No, a person is affected by his company, and a person should know that it's worth investing in good company. You're going to be with smart people, you'll get smart. You're going to be with fools, then you'll end up bashed. How many people don't drink and drive until they're in a crowd that does drink and drive? How many people don't smoke until they're in a crowd that does smoke? How many people don't do many improper things until they're in a bar where everyone's doing improper things? The trick is to stay away from the negative influences, to be among people who are going to pull us up. The place where it gets difficult, by the way, is when you're a teacher. Rav Feinstein once told me, said, a teacher is a tug of war. You enter a classroom, the students are pulling down, and you got to pull up. And the question is, who's going to pull who more?
Like you said, it brings those who are tamei, makes them higher, but brings those who are high up, brings them up.
Yeah, it's a tough call. It's very, very tough. Yeah. Chaf Aleph. Michael, you want to read? 21.
Hatem Taradev Ra'at Sadikim Islam Tov.
Chataim. people who are sinners, tiradef ra'a, their bad doings are going to chase after them. People think that if they get away with a crime today, so it's over, they're wealthy. I just saw recently a guy who 27 years after he committed a crime, they caught up with him. So the guy thought he already set up, established a life, and he was okay.
Murder.
And, yeah, it was a murder.
It's the only thing that can last 27 years.
It's interesting. It's a long story, a lot of coincidences. You see, Hashem wanted this man caught. Like, they needed to get the weapon, and the weapon happened to be by a specific judge who was the father-in-law of the DA who was responsible for this 27 years later, and someone happened to bring it up by him. Very interesting. You see that, it was mamash, a lot of ashgacha that this man was caught. And that happens often. Look at the World Trade Center bombings, where they went back to get the money for the rent a car. They rented a car to plant the bomb. And then they came back to collect the money for the rent a car, the deposit. That's how the FBI caught them. So you never know. But that was short.
What's the deposit? $500?
I don't know. Holechet chachamim, whoever chatain teradefra, people who are sinners, the bad is going to chase after them. The et tzadikim, but with the tzadikim yisharem tov, ultimately they'll be paid back good. This is talking about the way a person deals with other people also. People think that they could spit on other people, and because they're in a state of power, that's not going to get back at them. And in life, we see it's not that way. When a person treats, when you stick a knife in someone's back, it comes back to haunt you. There's a story in the Holocaust. A guy told me he once got, I don't remember how he got, a portion, an extra portion. And he gave it out to some people, and he didn't offer it to his cousin. He didn't offer it to his cousin. A few years later, still during the Holocaust, like 2 years later, he ended up in a new ghetto, and he was orphaned. And this cousin was married. She had a house. She was well-to-do. She took in orphans. She took in like 15 or 20 orphans into her own house. But her own cousin, she wouldn't take in. When he came to the door, she said, "When you had extra food, did I exist?" "No." "So go find somewhere else." That's what she answered.
Is that okay? Say this.
What? Is that okay? No, it's not okay to say it. It ended up that he wasn't there and she was, and unfortunately she got killed and he didn't. You never know how things will end up. My wife has an uncle who he was a gunman on a ship in the United States during World War II. And they're sitting shooting at planes flying by, and they're on a ship, and he's sitting next to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew tells him, he says, "I feel like I'm going to die here. I feel like I'm going to die here. Do you mind if we switch places? I have a wife, I have a family. You have no one. Let's switch places. I feel like I'm going to die." So he said, "You really think like this it makes a difference?" So he said, "Yeah." There were two gunners sitting one next to the other. So he said, "Fine, if that's what you want. You have a wife and kids, and you feel like you're going to die, fine, we'll switch." So they get up, they switch. No sooner do they switch, the plane flies by and mows down the ship with bullets. That exact place where he was sitting, the guy who switched seats got killed. And my wife's uncle, he's still alive today, at Mavislin. And if he would have stayed there, he wouldn't. Like, the other guy got killed. So you never know how things will end up. You don't know. But, because he switched, he remained alive. The guy who was scared he would get killed, he said, "Where I'm sitting now, I'm going to die. I have to switch seats with you." He switched seats and a minute later died. I don't know. Pasuk Chaf Bet.
Tov yanhil bnei banim. Let's afoch. Let's adik hael. Chutzta.
Tov, good, yanhil, gives inheritance bnei banim. For his son's sons, meaning his grandchildren, will still merit from his being good. When a person is a good person, so his merits, his money, whatever he has accomplished in this world keeps going. Today they call it yichus, but it's not only yichus. You walk into a place, if your grandfather was a giving and a kind person, the guy here at the Machon told me, his grandfather helped a lot of people, he was a tremendous doctor. Wherever he goes around the world, he meets people who tell him, oh, your grandfather helped me here, your grandfather helped me there, and he knows he has an open door. He could, wherever he goes, people are happy to take him in. Tov, a person's being good, yanchil, he gives it over bnei vanim to his grandchildren. It keeps going. And the good keeps going, and the money keeps going, and the wealth keeps going. And it's hidden for the tzaddik, the wealth, the power of a sinner. Meaning a sinner might have money, he might have wealth, but God is really storing it to pass it on to the tzaddik. And this is, our sages say this is referring to Mordechai and Haman, that Haman was a tremendously wealthy person, and all his wealth ended up being given over to Mordechai. Mordechai the tzaddik got all his wealth. His children didn't get it. So when a person is good, he has what to give over to his grandchildren. And the wealth of a person who is a sinner, who is a chote, is really just being stored for the tzaddik. His offsprings won't get it. Yeah, there's a pasuk in Kehelet that says that. Yesh ra'a tachat ha-shamesh, ish... I don't remember.
Rav Ochel near Rashim, Yesh Nisper below Mishpat.
So over here, this is an unusual comet. The sign under the Reish is supposed to be read Rov Ochel. Usually it's read Rav. You're right. There's no way you could know it. We have a tradition that way. I do recordings of Mishlei, like reading Mishlei to remind myself of how it's supposed to be read. So the first time I read it, I also write, because you're used to this spelling is Rav usually. But this, we have a tradition that this one is read differently. It's also a different meaning. Rov ochel, the having a lot of food. It's Rov ochel. Nir Rashim. How do you get a lot of food into the world? Because you have a lot of poor people plowing the fields. V'yesh nispe, and there are those who get wiped away. Below mishpat, without any justice. What does that mean? So, how do you get food into the world? You have a lot of people plowing. Who plows? People who don't have money to have their own field. So our sages say this is discussing how do you get Torah into the world. How do you get a lot of Torah into the world? Because you have a lot of students. And when a person has a lot of students, they ask him good questions, he ends up being smarter. And our sages say this was true of Rebbe also. Even the great Rebbe became so great because he had great disciples. So Rov Ochel, a lot of food, a lot of Torah comes into the world because you have Nirashim. You have the poorer, meaning the disciples who know less, they're constantly plowing. They're working away at the Rebbe, asking questions, attacking him from here, attacking him from there.
So in a way, you could say Rav Ochel.
Yeah, you could say Rav Ochel, right? V'yesh nispeh, and just like you have the person who's getting a lot of food from the poor people plowing, so they're all poor, they need the food. But bottom line, who's getting rich? The guy on top. You also have situations where yesh nispeh, a person can be wiped away below mishpat without any justice. What's this referring to? So our sages say that this is supposed to be understood a little differently. That there are those of them, a lot of these students who are going to be wiped away from the world. Why? Because they themselves were below mishpat without they did not maintain the justice system to the level that they should have. So that's why a lot of students pass away.
I didn't get the connection with the first half of the second half.
It depends on how, according to Chazal, if you're saying Rov Ochel Nirashim, a lot of bread from the plowing of the poor, and that's referring to a lot of Torah, from the fact that you have students constantly asking questions. So then the pasuk is referring to V'yesh Nispeh, there are those who are wiped away, the the students, you have students who, from those students who are there learning and they make the Rebbe so smart, a lot of them end up being wiped away below mishpat because they don't maintain the level of justice like they should. That's one understanding. And the according to the simple understanding, rov ochel nirashim, there seems to be an injustice in the world that the rich get richer. They have a lot of food from the fact that the poor are plowing and the poor don't get richer. They're doing the hard work and the boss is the one that's getting rich. And by the same token, v'yesh nisper, there are those who pass away below mishpat. You don't see that they did something that they deserve to die for, and yet they die. How does that work? So we have a tradition that the world is judged on a few levels. The world as a whole is judged. A country as a whole is judged. A city as a whole is judged. A county as a whole is judged. A locale as a whole is judged. A house as a whole is judged, and a family as a whole is judged, and then an individual is judged. So there could be judgment on a country that the country needs to be wiped out. Does that mean every individual deserves to be wiped out? Not necessarily. So a person could get wiped away, v'yesh nispeh, a person could get wiped away below mishpat, where it seems like there's no justice, but there is justice. He got wiped away because there were a lot of people around him sinning. Look at Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu said, don't leave Israel. So Gedaliah ben Achikam was killed, but we have to stay. God said, stay, we'll be successful. Don't worry. Even though there was another rebellion, the Babylonian kingdom will give us another chance. You know, this isn't the first rebellion we've had. And the people were scared. They didn't listen to him. Initially, they said, after Gedaliah was killed, the Babylonian kingdom wiped out the Jewish kingdom in the land of Israel. In the land of Israel. They destroyed the temple. And then they appointed a viceroy. They said, Gedaliah ben Achikam, he's in charge. And don't you dare rebel, they told Gedaliah. A bunch of people rebelled against Gedaliah and killed him. So now the Jews came to the Navi Yirmiyahu, to Jeremiah, and they said, whatever you say, we'll do. If you tell us to run to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, we'll go. If you tell us to stay, we'll stay. So he said, okay, God said, stay, don't go. So they said, yeah, but we're scared, we're going. Come on, we all do that. And not only did they insist on going, right. He also said, you're not going to listen. And they said, not only we're going, you're coming with us. And they forced him to come with them. And ultimately, they all died together. He said, if you go to Egypt, you'll die. They forced him to come with them. And they died and he died. Rov ochel, the wealthy get a lot of food. Nirashim, by the plowing of the poor. V'yesh nispeh, there are those that are wiped away. Below mishpat, without a judgment call that says they specifically have to die. But rather, there's a global judgment that people have to die. I'm going to read the last two psukim. I want us running already very late. Chosech shivto sonei vino. One who holds back, he's chosech, he's stingy on his stick. He doesn't use it a lot to hit the kids. Sonei vino, it's not because he loves them, it's because he hates them. You love your kid, you take a baseball bat and you beat him up. No, that's not pshat. That is not pshat. So let's read the pasuk as a whole. Ve'ohavo, and one who loves his child, shicharo musar. He's quick to guide him the right way. Doesn't say the one who loves him takes a baseball bat and hits him. Sometimes a child needs to be hit. But when you love a child, you are shicharo, shicharo like shachar. Like early in the morning, you come and you give him musar, you teach him the right way to steer clear of mistakes. So a person who loves his child begins his chinuch early and teaches him the right way early. Now that doesn't mean a parent won't have to hit a child. There are times when a parent has to hit a child. You don't have a choice. A child bites. The best way of teaching him not to bite is to bite him back. You bite him back, he understands that biting hurts and that doesn't pay to bite. You can explain it to him from today until tomorrow, but he won't understand it. A child starts playing with matches. You could explain to a two-year-old he shouldn't play with matches, but the chances are that he will not inculcate the message that you're trying to imbibe within him just because you can speak your heart out. You want him not to touch matches, you're going to have to hit him. Now, obviously, when you hit a child, so you have to know two things. You have to know that different children respond differently to being hit, and with some kids, hitting them doesn't work. And you also have to know that the point of hitting a child is not so much the pain as the shame. the hurt in the feelings is what gives the message. Now, obviously, you tap a kid, that's not going to do it. There has to be a certain element of pain, but it's a very small element of pain. The point here is not the pain. The point is that the parent was upset at him, and you have to sometimes yell at a child. And you have to sometimes show like you're very upset at him. Sometimes a child hits. So sometimes you have to tell him, look, if you're going to hit, you're going to get hit. And you have to yell at him. You have to try doing it in other ways. Parents sometimes take things out of hand. They forget that the point of hitting is the message that's being given across. And then they start beating up the kid. Now, think about it. The kid, let's say he spoke disrespectfully. If you're going to go all out when he speaks disrespectfully, what's going to be when he does something worse? You can't keep escalating things, because at some point, what are you going to do to the kid? Tie him up? What are you going to do? The point is that it's not a show of strength here. There has to be a firm understanding on behalf of the parent. I am the parent, and what I say is going to have to go. I'm responsible for this child. I love him. I'm supposed to know what's best for him, and he has to understand that, and whether he understands it or not, what I say goes. And then he has to understand that the hitting is a tool of discipline, and it's just a tool. It's not a question of I am stronger and I can hit you. Parents lose that sometimes. And it's very easy for a parent to think that he's not hitting out of anger because he could speak to the other parent calmly. Parents sometimes think, I didn't hit him out of anger. I spoke to my husband or to my wife calmly just before and just after I hit him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but were you able to speak to the kid calmly? I'm not worried you're angry at your wife when you hit your son. I'm not worried she's angry at you when she hit him. I'm worried how angry is she at the child. How angry are you at the child when you hit him? The fact that you could speak to everyone else, including yourself, calmly doesn't show you didn't hit out of anger. Now, that doesn't mean you don't show anger. I mean, I don't know if you guys were there once when I hit my son. I don't do it that often. I'm definitely going to show anger then. But if it's really me doing it out of anger, then I don't hit him. There are times when he definitely deserves to be hit. I mean, but I can't hit him. I'm upset.
He's not 2 yet, is he?
He's 2.5.
Oh, okay. He's terrible 2. Sorry about it.
Right. You also have to know that sometimes there's no point in hitting a kid head on. Meaning a kid, you tell him, don't touch the record player. You buy a record player for $300, you don't want him touching it.
Oh,
the first thing you should know is, you're at fault. Why'd you buy a record player for $300 if you don't have a place to put it where he can't reach it? His nature is to touch it. You can't blame him. His nature is to touch it. You can't expect of a kid not to do certain things. But you walk home a day after you bought it and suddenly you see he wrecked it. You walk home and you find that he pulled all the cords out of the computer and they didn't all come out properly. You still have jacks stuck in and jacks broken out. And now you see you're not sure you have a computer anymore. So you lost $1,000 and now try not being upset. But you can't yell at the kid at that point. You're too upset. Maybe he deserves to be yelled at. Maybe you told him not to touch it and maybe you had a right to tell him not to touch it. I'm not sure. I mean, his nature is going to be to touch that computer. If you put it at a place where he could reach it, it's your fault. You can't expect something different. He's 2 years old. What do you want from a kid? 3 years old. But what's for sure is that that's not a time when you could deal with the chinuch. You're too upset. When the pasuk says chosech shivto, it means one who holds it back when he should use it. He's stingy on it when he should use it. That's because he hates his child. And sometimes parents think they love a child when they avoid discipline. And they're not loving that child. And the child senses it. You love a child, then you know I'm doing what's right, and you're going to do what's right, and I'm going to discipline you if you don't. Parents too often are scared of disciplining their child, and they think that stems from love. The pasuk is saying no. A parent who does not discipline his child hates him. Our sages say that even Avraham Avinu, Abraham, fell at this point. He had 2 children. His eldest son, he loved so much. He had so many years he didn't have a child. Finally, he had a child. He loved him very, very much, and he didn't rebuke him. What happened? Out came Yishmael. You have a wild animal coming out of there. What evolves from that kind of discipline? You have a wild animal. He's wild. He's a hunter. He's Yishmael. And our sages say, the Medrash in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, the Mechilta in the beginning of Shmos says, that Avraham Avinu didn't reprimand him enough. King David had a son, he didn't reprimand enough. That kid tried killing him. Parents think that if they don't rebuke a child, that's love. That is not love. That's a person who hates the son. He might be scared of him. He might want him out of his way. He might want to continue with his life. You love your child, you're going to teach him what's right. Tzaddik, ochel lesova nafsho. The tzaddik eats till his stomach is satiated. Uveten rasha'im techsar. And the stomachs of the rasha'im is always lacking. He never feels like he's had enough. And this can be understood in a spiritual level, that God blesses the tzaddikim, that they feel satiated even when they've eaten less. And the rasha'im, as much as the elite, they won't feel satiated. And it could also be understood on a more mundane level, that when a person is a tzaddik, when a person is on a certain spiritual level, so then whatever he eats, he psychologically he's had enough, so a lot of our satiation depends on our psychology. Like Chazal say, Abaye was sent by his Rebbe to bring Mishloach Monos, and Abaye was very, very poor. So he says, when I left to bring Mishloach Monos, I felt like I was full. And then I came to the wealthy head of state. I brought him Mishloach Monos, chief rabbi, and he lay out before me 13 different dishes, and then he gave me a whole bunch of desserts, and it was so yummy, I ate it, I felt like I could eat the plate afterwards. I wanted to eat the plates. And he says, when I left, I thought I was full. So the Gemara says, what's Abaye coming to teach us? Either that a pauper doesn't even recognize how hungry he really is, or we always have room for yummy food. You know, your wife or your mother is going to offer you, here, have some whole wheat bread, no ma, I'm full. Have some cake. Yeah, sure.
You're right.
Sure. We all have room for dessert. So, tzaddik, a person who's tzaddik, a psychological state is, how much do I need to eat? Okay, so I had that, I've had enough. When he eats, he's satiated. But a rasha is always interested, what's he interested in? The physical. So he's always thinking, gee, maybe they have another course, maybe this, maybe that. I wonder what they're going to serve at this wedding. You always see people talking that way. What's for lunch today? Yeah, they're focused on that. Okay, so then whatever they're going to have, they might end up still being hungry. Shkoach.